Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Well, we've just come out of Prime Minister's Questions and it was quite an angry affair, wasn't it, James?
There's a lot of confected anger at PMQs, but I thought Theresa May's kind of ire at Jeremy Corbyn today was genuine. Jeremy Corbyn was essentially going on the risks of no deal, and Theresa May kind of kept basically shouting at him, well, there wouldn't be any risk of no deal if you'd voted for my deal, which has always been her line, but she had more passion to it, and I think it's in a way more conviction to it than she has before. And I think that there was a kind of, you could tell she was cross because she was trying to tell Jeremy Corbyn off at one point and said, you're just all mouth and trousers, when it's opposite, whether, I've always thought the phrase is all mouth and no trousers, but she did genuinely seem angry at him. And I think you can understand her rage, because one of the things that Theresa May has failed to do politically was to make the point that there was something epically hypocritical about people like Yvette Cooper saying, oh, no deal keeps me up at night, and then voting against her withdrawal agreement, which leaves open, I mean, considering Yvette Cooper is in favour of a kind of softish Brexit, she says she doesn't want to stop it, all those options are available under Theresa May's withdrawal agreement. So I think you do see that, and I think you do see from Theresa May hints of how she will be in her post-premiership. And I thought that Jeremy Corbyn kept trying to tempt her to kind of criticise Jeremy Hunt and Boris Johnson, and she wouldn't do it today. And she also, you know, that pull of tribal loyalty is there. You know, there were a lot of kind of tribal attacks on Labour, which, you know, cheered up the Tory benches a bit. But I think it's also a sign that it's not going to be quite, some people think that she will be cause real problems for her successor if they go for no deal. I think her performances at PMQs show that she's not, certainly not there yet. She's certainly not as advanced on that front as Philip Hammond is yesterday in what he was hinting at Treasury Questions. He said, you know, I think Theresa May still feels more of a sense of loyalty, but I think it is also kind of the world's worst kept secret that she would not be delighted if her successor was Boris Johnson.
Katie, how did Jeremy Corbyn fare? Were his questions much cop?
I think Jeremy Corbyn did fine with his questions. I think, to be honest, both sides, not to be incredibly boring in my analysis, both sides got enough of what they wanted. I think Theresa May was very combative, as James said. Ultimately, Jeremy Corbyn knew the answer he was going to get. Theresa May has said many times in response to anything about no deal, deal not passing, that if you want a deal, you have to vote for one, not vote against something. So I don't think it came as a big surprise to him. He also got the compliment that we discussed, all trousers, they can now use that going forward. I think when it came to the backbench questions, there were several, obviously, softball questions for Theresa May. I think there is almost a sense that as Theresa May is phasing out, as she is getting to the end of her premiership, you can see in a way Conservative MPs wanting to help her a bit, I think, and wanting her to go out with some dignity and with a show of support. Mm. And I know a few weeks ago you had her PPS messaging around being like, look, we need people to ask questions. We need people to be in PMQs. Now, it wasn't filled to the rafters, but I still think there is that sense that for all the divisions, you can see quite a lot of Tory MPs wanting to help her.
Well, I mean, what's the point in going for her when she's only got a few days left? As you say, it's a bit like sort of clubbing a seal, isn't it? There's not really a huge amount of
Yeah, points. And on that, when she was talking about to get a Brexit deal, you need to vote for one. They want these hostile questions from European Research Group members, partly because, as you point out, it's not as though she is the person to lobby now when it comes to getting the Brexit wish. But there's also the sense that you don't have Marc Francois, people who have been really combative against her, people like Andrea Jenkins, who called her a Remainer Prime Minister. You don't have them doing that kickback anymore. Now, it's partly because they think they're about to get what they want, but I do think it does, again, just show that things in some ways, although there are all these tensions, people are putting them to the side for now until something firmer is in place, such as a new prime minister with a new government.
James, there has been a row outside of the Commons chamber, of course, in the Tory leadership contest on the sugar tax, as Boris Johnson has been pledging a review into sin taxes, as he calls them, including the sugar tax, which has really split Conservative MPs, including those in his own leadership campaign. So what's he up to?
So, I mean, you have to just think, columnist Boris Johnson has never liked the idea of syntaxes. You know, it is worth remembering that in the early years of this millennium, he used to kind of rail against Yvette Cooper because she was the public health minister and kept coming out with what he saw as very nannying pronouncements about stuff. It's worth remembering at the 2006 Tory conference, he caused the most massive row because David Cameron had praised Jamie Oliver's attempt to get turkey Twizzlers taken out of school dinners, and Boris Johnson had kind of said he'd get rid of Jamie Oliver and people should eat what they want, and kind of urged mothers to pass crisps and pies through the railings of a school playground in an act of defiance. So I don't think his aversion to these syntaxes is particularly surprising. He is a Toby Belch conservative, you know. But people are suddenly saying, oh, as mayor of London, he introduced the sugar tax, all this stuff. I mean, there is a slight difference between columnist Boris and governing Boris on this question. I also think, in a weird way, the point of a sugar tax isn't so much necessary to raise money, but it has led to companies reducing the amount of sugar in their products. And I think that some the defenders of a sugar tax would say, well, that's the point of it. Now, I will let Katie speak about what this has done to her beloved Iron Brew and her stockpiling of the full sugar version. But, you know, but I mean, there is a tension here about what the role of government should be. I mean, I personally think that the better answer to this question is clearer labelling and greater personal responsibility. You know, obesity is obviously a problem, but, you know, people should take more responsibility for their own health. I think in terms of the political future, I think one of the things that would worry me if I was going to be the chief whip of a Boris Johnson government is how quickly things keep escalating. And I think that that's partly because to some people in the Conservative Party, he is so against what they stand for that people go to kind of DEFCON 4 immediately. Steve Brine, the kind of normally mild-mannered MP for Winchester, basically went on the TV today and said, well, if he wants to repeal this, I'll be voting with Labour and the division lobbies to keep it, which is quite a move from a call for evidence to I'll see you in the division lobby.
But Katie, this does highlight how difficult it's going to be for a lot of the pledges that both Boris Johnson and Jeremy Hunt are making to really ever make it into statute, into reality, because the parliamentary arithmetic, something that Theresa May has often used as an excuse, is very difficult.
Yes, and I think a lot of their pledges aren't necessarily aimed for this hung parliament. I mean, clearly you want to win around the membership, you want to win around MPs, so you want to have big ideas. If you have to deal with the reality of not really having a majority to enact many things, it's not such an exciting vision, is it, to try and instill confidence. I do think that these future, perhaps, you know, would-be prime ministers also believe that they might get a majority at some point. And perhaps by setting these ideas out, it would be for when it's after the next general election. So I think that's one side of it. I would say when it comes to Boris Johnson's big ideas, we saw it's not just Steve Brine. I mean, people in his own camp. You have Matt Hancock, who is supposed to be helping with lots of his policy ideas and who has been positioning himself, or at least friends of Matt Hancock say, to be the Chancellor. So you see that ambition there. Yet yesterday they were talking about the positives of the sugar tax and the way. So there's a clear clash. Whereas on the other side you have people like Liz Truss, who are helping Boris Johnson, who really don't think the state should be interfering. Now, talking about Iron Brew, which I think is why I'm on the podcast today, and
the only reason, obviously,
and the sugar levels. I personally was dismayed when they reduced the sugar in Iron Brew, but I was intrigued today to see some of Boris Johnson's supporters. So Ross Thompson, the Scottish Conservative MP, quickly took to Twitter to say, this is brilliant. The people in my constituency can have full sugar Iron Brew again. So it was actually going straight from, oh, clearly this is a review, jumping the gun also, but to see how you can sell that. So I think there are lots of Conservatives who do think that there should be limits on this, but there are also Conservatives who, like Liberty, but also think it is fiscally responsible to have things like the sugar tax, because ultimately, yes, personal responsibility, as James points out, but they would argue, well, it's personal responsibility, but then who pays if you then have all these illnesses which are offset because you have become obese from having all these things? So it's clearly that point where it's state meets personal choice, and I think that is something which there is a very wide mix of opinion, and again, it might come down to something which we don't always have too much in politics, which is nuance about how exactly we're going to establish the labelling, the limits, etc.
The problem is all libertarianism in British politics runs up against the problem of the National Health Service. As long as you have a National Health Service, where, you know, everyone gets treated. There's no insurance element. There's no element that the health service can say to you when you turn up, well, actually, we've been looking at your diet and we've decided that you're going to have to pay more for this treatment than anybody else. You know, you are going to run up against this obstacle because people who are in favour of things like the sugar tax will make the argument that Katie was just making, which is, well, hang on a second, you know, there are negative externalities to the public purse if we don't curb this behaviour.
And finally, Katie just mentioned people who are hoping to get jobs under the new Prime Minister and have signed up to leadership campaigns accordingly. There's another row going on about jobs, James, and it's in the EU.
Yes, so we wait now. The European Council has come up with its job nominations. We now wait to see if the European Parliament will approve them. I think there is no certainty that the European Parliament will, because the job nominations essentially represent the end of the Spitzenkandidaten process, the idea that the lead candidate, whichever political grouping wins the European elections, should go and automatically become president of the Commission. You've instead got someone who wasn't on the ballot paper at all in the European Parliament elections, Ursula von der Leyen, the German defence minister, in line for that job. I think from a UK point of view, although these people will come in after October the 31st, the notional date which the UK is meant to have left, they're going to be hugely influential because they're going to matter in terms of the trade deal that the UK can get afterwards. I also think that the appointment of Ursula von der Leyen is a bit of a blow to those who want to stop Brexit, because she is a very clear federalist, and which again makes it harder to claim that the EU is purely a trading arrangement and it's a Brexiteer scare story, the idea that anyone wants to create a United States of Europe, when you've got the person who is going to be the President of the Commission being quite clearly on the record as saying that some kind of federal state is what they would like to aim for.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie. And you can listen, subscribe, rate and review and become a general all-round fan of the Coffeehouse Shops podcast on the iTunes Store. And do email us, podcast@spectator.co.uk, with your thoughts and fan mail. Thank you.